Instagram, blue sky, hashtag analogy. Well, Rosie, this has just been delightful. Thank you so much for this. And thank you for those more than 100,000 articles you've got out there, and especially for Women in Red. Congratulations.
Thank you so much for having me on this, Lynn. A big shout out to you and your podcast, and also to Wikipedia and to all the people out there who are thinking about editing Wikipedia. You've never edited before, but maybe now you're going to go ahead and do it. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Choose to be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Thank you for joining us here today. You can find all my shows on my website at choosetobecurious.com. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Choose to be Curious, where you can share your ice skating analogy, hashtag analogy. Many thanks to my guest, Rosie Stevenson Goodnight. Links to her on Wikipedia, of course, and the Women in Red Project on my website. Thanks, too, to Sean Ballack for our theme music. And this is Great is the Contessa by The Contessa via Blue Dot Sessions. I hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, choose to be curious.
Thanks, Lynn Borton, for sharing that excellent interview. And thanks to all Wings supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose writings include 36 Steps Toward a Gift Economy, readable online at gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills Volume 4 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you now through April 15th at kboo.fm/ATNF4.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Animal, now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist David Cohen. David's here talking about The Church of Lepidoptera, his show, which is on now at Gallery 114, which is at 1100 Northwest Gleason Street in The Pearl, through March 29th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, David.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad to talk about all this.
So you've got this great show, The Church of Lepidoptera. And Lepidoptera means butterflies and moths. Your style is watercolor. And when people come into the space, they're probably going to see what look like kind of Roman floor mosaics, but you've painted them on paper with watercolor. Where did that idea come from, the mosaic idea?
Well, actually, I have a background also in anthropology and archaeology. And in my many trips to Europe, I've always been totally in love with the old mosaic floors. The Romans mostly did those, and the mosaics in Ravenna and in other places as well. So it was a really nice shift going from doing some more realistic watercolor work where things were looking not quite photographic, but still recognizable, to doing something a little more abstract where I could also play with pattern and color and light in a different way. So these sort of developed out of those efforts, and I'm enjoying working in this style.
Mm-hmm. So the font is a sort of, medieval font. The room is kind of like a church. You've set up these walls, mini walls, to divide into two spaces. And the work changes halfway through to become like stained glass windows. So these are watercolors that have moths and pupae arranged in a sort of kaleidoscopic pattern, like a rose window in a cathedral. Tell us why a church, what's your religion?
Well, I'm Jewish, which is even funnier, you know, there. But church kind of came up as I was working on the mosaics, and they were seemed to be morphing into stained glass. And I liked the idea of kind of using the stained glass idea as a structure to continue the way I was designing these. After doing the stained glass for a while, I realized I was, in a sense, almost building a church. And I loved, of course, the old churches when in my travels to Europe. I thought they were just magnificent pieces of art. But for me also, church in the Northwest here is also connected to nature, that I spend a lot of time out in nature. That, in my mind, is my church where I get spiritual renewal. And so when I started thinking about these stained glass windows as building a church, I was thinking about, could I kind of build a church to nature? And so that evolved into this the idea for the show, not to just put pieces up on the wall that were pretty and somehow connected, but to have a theme that could add another layer for the viewer to come in and maybe think a little differently about the work that's here.
So let's take a closer look at the first two on the right as you come in. There's a piece of writing that deals with them. One is called Saint Junonia, the common buckeye. So it's a type of butterfly,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And it's light blue and orange. This is arranged like a, you know, like a mosaic floor in like Rome. So there's a butterfly in the middle. Above it is a flower, and below it is the caterpillar. Very spiky, knobbly brown and orange caterpillar. The background colors are sort of gold and white, and there's a light blue border. So think of this as inlaid. Do they use glass or ceramic, the Romans?
They do use glass or stone. Both are used in mosaic, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's the design? Why this sort of three-part thing, you know, caterpillar, butterfly, and then flower?
Yeah, so I, again, thought about design and how I would design these, and I had been doing single, I did a series of sea life before this where there was sort of a single crab or starfish or something there. And I wanted to kind of come up with a slightly more complicated design, which I like complication. And I also fell in love with the caterpillars of each of these butterflies too, which have their own very unique patterns. So then I thought butterfly, caterpillar, and then the plant in them is what's called a host plant. Every butterfly has a host plant or a series of host plants where they either get their nourishment from that plant in order to reproduce, or they actually reproduce within that plant. So every butterfly has its own host plant. So that's what these are all combinations of the host plant, caterpillar, butterfly. But again, putting them in a design that's somewhat formal, but something you might see on a floor, you know, in a mosaic tile design. So anyway, I went with that, and I did a number of those that had that format.
Mm-hmm. Next to it is Saint Euphidrius.
Taylor's Checker Spot is the name of this butterfly.
This is a brown butterfly with orange and white patches all over it, really. Again, the caterpillar is brown, but with these incredible spikes all over it. And the flower at the top is a red, sort of thin petaled flower. And then there are green leaves in the background. And the design is similar. It's flower on top, Lepidoptera in the middle, and then caterpillar at the bottom.
Yeah, again, I did this format for a little while just to create a series that all related to each other so I could show them together and they made some sense. But again, host plant, butterfly, caterpillar, a design in the background that kind of holds them all together. And so I did that about five or six times and then said, okay, how can I further develop this idea? And so what you mm-hmm. see in the rest of the room are kind of further developments of this mosaic mm-hmm. and then stained glass idea.
So let's walk over to this very different piece in the corner. It's almost behind the desk in gallery 114. And this is a watercolor, more traditional. It's like you're looking down on someone's desk and that person's got a bunch of caterpillars in a shadow box, I guess.
Yeah,
in a frame. There's an anatomical book open with the ink drawings of butterflies and caterpillars. There's a series of highly coloured beetles. There's another book called Insect Life. There's books on the table. There's a caliper for measuring and a mounted magnifying glass. This is your old style, right? When was this?
Yeah, this was what I did the series before I started these. And I was trying to be very realistic with creating a recognizable space, although it's all invented, which is another longer story. Mm-hmm. But the whole series was really about collections and the things we collect and the spaces maybe that people who would collect them would live in. And so that person maybe walked away for a second, and it allowed me to play with light and space in a different way, mm-hmm. But also to talk about the complexity of the natural world. And so each of these had different collections of some birds, some insects, some a whole range of other things as well. Actually, I did one with artifacts as well, baskets and things. So anyway, it was just different collections, and it gave me a chance to play with composition and tied to my interest in science and nature and art.
Mm-hmm. But you were doing this, and you know, this is very complicated and very realistic. And then you had a kind of shift, and you changed your style and your content. Right?
Yeah. These were very complicated to execute with the number of objects and the kind of detail that was required. So I was trying to figure out what would be next, and I started playing with this idea of still lives, but a little simpler. And I discovered the visual, the image of the mosaic floor, and so I incorporated that into a lot of pieces. So this led directly to that. That also was a kind of a still life. But those mosaic floors were a key element to those designs, and I realized I actually could make my own designs, that mm-hmm. those were old Roman floor designs, which were mm-hmm. really interesting and nice, but I probably could do my own. So this is kind of a precursor to this series that got me thinking about how I could make my own mosaics, in mm-hmm. essence, but do it, of course, with watercolor and pen.
Yeah. So your watercolor style, I mean, it's very complex. You've got so many shadows going on. Each beetle has its own, it looks like a pair of shadows because of the different light sources. You know, there's a curved shadow running across the rectangular shadow box. This is all done with like very careful watercolor shading. And then when you switch to the mosaic, it's a lot flatter, like your floor is flat. You just, each tile has like one unit of color where it's a shade, yes. And then you move on. And what was sort of liberating about this change?
Well, in some ways it was simpler, but it required more design thinking. I mean, the complex watercolors I did earlier were complex because there were 40 objects in them, and I had to design, you know, come up with a composition that felt good. These were much more kind of design focused, where someone who was designing a floor, let's say, would have to really think about more of a two-dimensional way of approaching space. And so I wasn't really thinking about three-dimensional, although there are some parts of these where it does feel like it kind of goes under, and I played a little bit with three dimensions, but it was more my desire, interest in creating these patterns. And the butterflies were perfect because they are patterned creatures, and that's mm-hmm. what attracted me to them, besides my love of butterflies mm-hmm. as a child. But they gave me so much opportunity to play with patterns and shifting colors within those patterned areas that it seemed very infinite as a way to go. So it was liberating in many ways of not having to be so realistic, but it created some other challenges that I had to resolve that were kind of, again, fun. Mm-hmm. As an artist, you want to keep creating challenges. You don't want to just repeat yourself. So I was ready for this next challenge. Mm-hmm.
So David, did you see the show Exquisite Creatures Revealed at OMSI, which was lots of beetles and sea creatures all hung and framed in this sort of like a collector would, but also for their aesthetic value?
Yeah, it was an interesting show. I'm familiar with his work,
Christopher Marlowe.
Yeah, and so and there's connections. I mean, he's dealing with design, and he's designing his images in ways that really bring out the structure of things, which is actually part of what I'm trying to do as well. I want really people to look at structure and form, which the design, even though there's some abstraction, really does. And so there's similarities. A number of people have looked at my work and brought him up, actually, especially because I actually did a whole series of mandalas, which were collections of repeated objects that were in a design as he has done as well. Oh, okay. He's done. Okay. So there were connections to that work, for sure.
But in your work, the kind of reverence for nature kind of takes over, and that's when you start making stained glass windows, painted watercolor stained glass windows.
Yeah, and you know, this is sort of also following on my own curiosities. I'm very curious about the natural world. I was when I was 5 years old. I still am, and I spend a lot of time out in nature. I'm a birder. I go birding on a regular basis, just to be out there and really observe. And so part of the art is, and especially those earlier pieces I was doing that were about plant and animal structure, was getting people to observe, because we don't really observe anymore. This is starting to go in slightly some different directions, but it's still also about a reverence for nature. And in the Pacific Northwest here, how we take nature seriously, and it's to another level. And even the analogy of the church here in this room and this show is sort of a reference to how folks in the Pacific Northwest really see nature as an important kind of spiritual part of their lives. So mm-hmm. So anyway, there's a little bit of play on words, but a little bit of reality mm-hmm. here too.
I'm always curious, like, people who are really into nature in this part of the world, where do they go? Like, how many hours do you have to put in? You can only go during the week when there's no one around, that kind of thing.
Well, you can go, of course, you can go anytime. And there's always, I mean, that's the thing. We don't live in California, so that you have cities where you're competing with lots of people. It's easy to get away out of the cities, away from civilization here in the Northwest. And I think that's what attracted me, you know, 40 plus years ago to being out here is in 5 minutes, you could be out and about. So, you know, going to the coast, going to the mountains, going to the gorge, you know, the Columbia River Gorge is definitely a special place. But where the birds are now, I kind of go where the birds are, and that's often in, again, a lot of places, lots of natural areas that even most people don't even know about that are here in the Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Are these like official reserves?
Yeah, wildlife refuges. Okay. Yeah, National Wildlife Refuge, the one in Tualatin, it is amazing. There's up and down the valley outside of Corvallis near Eugene. So there's tons of these everywhere that very, very few people go to. They're much more attracted to Multnomah Falls or Crater Lake, or going to a place that has that kind of drama. I don't really need the drama. I'm interested in just observing.
My name is Joseph Galliman. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist David Cohen. His show, The Church of Lepidoptera, is on now at Gallery 114 in the Pearl through March 29th. So David, you divided the room into two slightly, so the larger portion is a bit more church-like. So you've got your rose windows, your sort of watercolor paintings that look like cathedral stained glass windows, and the imagery is butterflies, caterpillars, and then ferns around the edge. Very, very technicolor. You know, for watercolor, this is very bright colors. You have another one, butterflies again, and different kinds of moths, I think, and wasps. At the opposite end, you have cones.
Seeds and pods and flowers of Oregon.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What attracted you to the rose window? It's usually the big round window at the end of a cathedral.
Yeah. Well, again, trips to Europe and falling in love with the churches there, the cathedrals, visually stunning places. And it was interesting, as I was doing the mosaic pieces, people started saying they look starting to look like stained glass. And so I said, oh, I could probably do stained glass, also was a time when I thought about going beyond my 22 by 30 inch watercolor paper to see if I could work bigger. And so that's another unusual thing I think about this show is the scale of things. It's again not what people think when they think watercolor. Mm-hmm. They're thinking very intimate, you know, small works. But I wanted to see how far I could push it. And if I was going to do a rose window, how big should a rose window be? It should feel like a good rose window. If I did it small, it wouldn't have any impact. So I think about scale a lot. And then what would go in the rose window? And I did one with butterflies and caterpillars, another one with Oregon flora, plants and seeds and pods. So I did those. And then I started doing a series of smaller windows that were kind of designed after old Gothic windows that also felt like, you know, the idea of stained glass, which was also patterns and abstraction and each one playing with it in a slightly different way. And so, yeah, so it started becoming very church-like as I was doing all these and wanted to kind of create a room that echoed that.
Mm-hmm. So you've got, you've got more of the leading, you know, the thick black lines dividing up these individual images. For example, there are some cones paired, there are acorns that are sort of matching each other, they're opposite each other. What kind of paper is this that's so big?
It's a roll of Arches watercolor paper, 140 pounds. So after, again, getting... feeling like the 22 by 30 inch watercolor paper was binding me, saying like, why am I letting the paper decide how big a piece should be? I tried to play with it, and I did. So these two large pieces, actually the first large piece I did was this moth on the wall here. Which,
what's that called?
That's a ceanothus moth. All the moths and all the plants here are bound in Oregon, so that's another kind of Oregon connection here. So that was the start of playing with different scales, and there are four pieces in the show that are, I'd say, overscaled. I did another piece called The Tree of Life, which is... also has religious connections as well, that is both symbolic but also realistic connection to kind of nature in the Northwest.
That is a large rectangle with a tree, and it's the roots are visible in the ground, so it's kind of cross-section at the bottom. There are different birds posed artfully in the tree, showing their best sides. And then around the edge are a series of, it's like more seeds, mushrooms, and the odd beetle. And it says Tree of Life at the bottom. That's a different style.
A little bit, but related. I had always been interested in this Tree of Life idea, having seen lots of artists who have tackled the idea a lot in carving wood and all. I've seen it a lot, and it seemed to fit with what I was doing. And also the scale, this is probably the biggest piece I've ever done. I think it's about 53 inches tall or so. So again, very unlike most watercolor, dependent on pattern, but really, really looking, playing with that the Tree of Life idea in a way that fits with everything else here.
Mm-hmm. So, David, you were the head of the Museum of Contemporary Craft for a long time. You went to art school, but then you went straight into arts admin, and you stopped making art, and then you retired, and then you started making art. You could have picked any kind of medium, I think, but you picked watercolor.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had not done art for 25 years. I'd been around artists who made every kind of work imaginable. And so where to start if you're going to start from scratch in a way? And I figured I just would start to draw. And it came really out of my drawing with just pen and ink. And then the pen and ink led to playing with ink washes and light. And then that whole technique that I developed with the pen and ink wash, it was an easy morph into working with watercolor because I was working with, in a way, water mediums. So it just sort of evolved that way. I didn't plan it. I didn't know what I was going to do. But here, this is what it's evolved into. And I'm really excited because I also don't really see work like this out there in the world. And that was important. This really had to be about David and about what I have to say. And so I wanted it to certainly feel a little unique and different, which I think it does.
Mm-hmm. What would you think if someone just took a photo of a moth and said, Instagram, turn this into a Roman mosaic watercolor?
AI could probably do that. That's the world we live in right now. And to each his own as a viewer, collector, you can surround yourself with any kind of image you'd like. But to me, the fact when you see these and you think about the patience and endurance it takes to do this kind of work, that's part of the story behind it. Is it's not just something that pops up on your screen. It's something that takes, in some cases, 2 months to create. So as a collector, as a viewer of images, it's all fair game out there. Everyone can do what they want to do. Mm-hmm.
You've included these beautiful glass pieces made by an artist called Jen Fuller. They're sort of like little clear vases, or maybe some of them are closed, or them look like a coffee bean, you know, with a dimple, an oval with a dimple. On each one there is a glass butterfly, usually in a couple of colors. The one we're looking at is called Butterfly Kiss Number 2. Blown Pat de Vere glass. So what is Pat de Vere and who's Jen Fuller?
Well, Jen is an amazing artist here in the Northwest, in Portland, has done fantastic glass work, mostly inspired by nature and natural objects. And she's developed some techniques that are just extraordinary. And when I saw her butterfly work, I said, oh my gosh, to have three-dimensional butterflies in my show would be wonderful. And she was able to squeeze me in and lend her work as part of the show. So they're beautiful pieces. The Pat de Vere process is one of powdered colored glass that has to be attached to a glass form. She's developed even her own technique of attaching those to these other blown glass forms, and it's very unique work, but I feel fits perfectly with what I'm trying to do here.
Pat de Vere, so they take like crumbled up glass and make a design,
correct.
And then when they put it in the kiln, it goes solid and
right,
shiny.
Correct. Yeah, and it solidifies. But it's like drawing with powder. Her ability to be accurate and do different recognizable butterflies with it is just extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. And then as the viewer of this show, we'll see a kind of a shrine, like an altar. It has a book that you made of your prints, some candles, a bit more Jen Fuller, you know, then there's these four central pieces with butterflies, and then there's a...
like a halo of little nets. It's the symbolic of when you see a painting or a mosaic in a church where they have a aura around the around the head of a saint or something.
Yeah. So they look like gold tea strainers, but they're actually fish scoops,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but also I was thinking about butterfly nets, you know, and as I was doing that. So a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, and even the altar itself is a little tongue-in-cheek, but going along with the church idea of what if we had a prayer book that where we prayed to the pollinators, mm-hmm. and what if the paintings were set up as a cross and had a halo like there were saints, and the candles, there's even candles in the image, and a pew, a little pew to sit on to read the prayer book. So it's again tongue-in-cheek a little bit, mm-hmm. but also about reverence and what is it that we revere, and shouldn't it be the wildlife that's in our lives all the time that we take for granted?
Yeah, I always think now when people talk about nature, it just has a dark shadow, like everything is in crisis. You can't talk about pollinators without saying how they're vanishing, and you know, who's going to pollinate our plants and stuff like that. How do you balance the kind of doom message of any talk about nature with what you probably felt all your life, you know, the joy that comes from being out birding or looking at butterflies?
It's added in my mind to my role as being an artist, and what's the role of an artist, and what stories can I tell, and can I tell a story that might make somebody look at nature a little differently, or think about it a little deeper, or affect them in some way. I mean, I'm not here to change the world, but I am here to express that there's beauty that we overlook, and there's amazing wonder and awe that we overlook on a regular basis. So will that change things? I don't know the direction. I can't change the way the world is heading, and part of me feels like maybe we do have to have some darkness before we see light again. But You don't know what you've got till it's gone. And so we might come back, and certain things can't come back. But on one hand, it's dark, but it gives artists a role to play in celebrating that the diversity and the amazingness that's out there.
So, David, I mean, you're doing this because you're retired, but you're obviously incredibly productive. What does it mean to you to get up every day and make art? Do you do it every day?
I do it most days. And it's like any kind of practice. After breakfast, I go out to the studio and I paint until lunch, and then I'll paint more, a little more in the afternoon. So I can be very productive, and I have the privilege to be retired and don't have to worry about doing too many other things except loving my grandchildren and wife and family. Yeah, it's a practice that's important for me as a person to keep pushing myself, challenging myself, exploring, not knowing where it's all going, even though a lot of it is figured out beforehand. It's a journey that I go on, and it's something I just have to do at this point. And I'm glad I get to do it now, and we'll see how long I can keep it going.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was artist David Cohen. He was talking about his show, The Church of Lepidoptera. The show is on now at Gallery 114 in The Pearl. That's at 1100 Northwest Gleason Street through March 29th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, David.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Escuchando KBOO por la 90.7 FM y en la internet kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 11 de marzo